I'm Dr. Angela Walk, and you are listening to the Run to the Top podcast.
Hi there, my running friend. This is Coach Claire Barthelic, the Planted Runner, and this is the Run to the Top podcast, one of the first and only running podcasts dedicated to making you a better runner with each and every episode. We are created and produced by the expert team of running coaches at runnersconnect.net, where you can find the best running information on the internet, as well as running coaching plans to fit every runner and every budget. One of the most important parts of staying strong and healthy as a runner is building our strength. We do squats, lunges, deadlifts, and planks to create strong legs, glutes, and core muscles. But what are you doing for your feet? Our feet are obviously a critical part of running, yet they could arguably win the title of the most neglected part of a runner's body. That is, until something goes wrong. One fairly common injury in runners is damage to the tissue connecting our heel bones up to our toes, called the plantar fascia. Plantar fasciitis sidelines countless numbers of runners each year with a stabbing pain in every step. The good news is there's treatment and prevention, which can make your feet less susceptible to this debilitating injury. And the best protocols might not be what you think they are. To help me out with this topic, I've brought on the plantar fasciitis doctor, Dr. Angela Walk. Yes, that's really her last name. And she is a chiropractic physician specializing in foot and gait analysis and plantar fasciitis from Nashville, Tennessee. Years ago, when a runner patient of hers came to her office with a particularly bad case of PF, Angela saw that the traditional treatment methods weren't working. So she dove into the research and developed her own plantar fasciitis treatment protocol that helped her runner get back to running marathons. Now treating and preventing PF is her specialty. We talk about why this injury happens so often in runners, what we can do to prevent and treat it, and most importantly, exactly when we can get back to running again. So if you've ever suffered from this awful injury, or if you'd like to avoid it in the first place, this is a must listen. Dr. Angela is not sponsoring our show in any way, but she has generously given Run to the Top listeners some great freebies, including a free plantar fasciitis self-treatment guide. This will all be in our show notes at runnersconnect.net/542, and I'll mention that again at the end of the show. And just a heads up, we had a couple of little sound quality issues that our genius sound editor, Jeremy, has mostly resolved, but you might hear a crackle or two in the audio. If you're a runner who constantly struggles with gas, bloating, and cramps, I highly suggest you check out Masszymes from Bioptimizers. Their digestive enzymes can help get rid of stomach issues naturally. I'll explain how and why it works later on in the episode, but you can get a free bottle to try just by heading to masszymes.com/runtothetopfree. With summer weather starting to heat up, it's becoming more and more important to pay attention to your electrolytes. Maintaining healthy electrolyte levels is not only important for your run, but your recovery and overall health as well. That's why we recommend all runners check out Element this year. It's loaded with everything you need to replenish your electrolyte balance with 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium. And it doesn't include anything you don't need, like extra sugar or anything artificial. Stay tuned for how you can get a free sample pack of element.com/runnersconnect. And now here's my conversation with Dr. Angela Walk. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Angela.
Hey, Claire. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this.
Yeah. So one of the more common and debilitating injuries a runner can face is plantar fasciitis. Can you give us a little anatomy lesson of the foot and what happens with this injury?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Plantar fasciitis is one of the most common conditions of the foot and heel. In fact, it's the most common condition I treat in my office. And in the runners community, I'm sure, you know, many of them have experienced that too. In fact, that's how I sort of fell into this when I kind of had a patient that was in a runners group. And we were trying to figure out how to treat her. And I became the plantar fasciitis doc in that way. So let me explain a little bit about what plantar fasciitis is. It is a condition of the foot and heel. It is when a person overwhelms the structural integrity of the plantar fascia. Pretty much what that means is you put too much stress on the plantar fascia. Now, the plantar fascia, I'm sure a lot of the runners have heard the term fascia. It is a thick fibrous band that originates here on the inside of the heel and runs into the arch of the foot and attaches at the forefoot and the metatarsals. Now, it's an important structure. It provides arch support, foot stability, but it also is important for our gait. It provides inversion of the rear foot. I know that's kind of a big term, but pretty much.
Yeah, explain that. What does that mean?
It rolls the calcaneus, so the heel bone, in with foot strike. So with our gait. So knowing that it's such an important structure in our gait sequence, injury creates a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So for those of you who are not watching at home, you're holding up a fake foot here. I hope it's fake at least. and it is this thick band that is basically on the arch of our foot, the underside of our foot. So, you know, a lot of people as a coach will come to me and they'll say, you know, Coach Claire, my heel hurts. And that is not enough information because there's a lot going on down there. Yeah, there is a lot going on. So how do we know that this is plantar fasciitis and not something else?
Yeah. So there's three common signs. And the first sign is, you know, the fascia originates here on this calcaneus. And it, if you apply the first sign, if you apply tenderness or apply pressure at this heel bone, the inside of the heel bone. So we're talking about the inside of the foot right here at this point. You apply pressure here, and if you notice pinpoint tenderness, that is the first sign. Now, the second sign that you may have plantar fasciitis is pain or stabbing pain in the arch or heel with the first steps in the morning. So you get up in the morning, you take that first step, you're loading those tissues, and you feel this instant, you know, excruciating stabbing pain in your arch and heel. It, as you continue to walk in the morning, it loosens up a little bit. It can also occur like a long car ride. So you're sitting for, you know, 6 or 8 hours, or with many of us these days, prolonged sitting at a workstation. And then you go to get up and you load that foot for the first time, it creates that pain. That is the second. That's a telltale sign, but a distinctive feature of plantar fasciitis. The third sign is you extend the great toe. So you take your big toe, you put it into extension, raise it up towards the knee. And if that elicits a pulling or a pain or into the arch and into that heel, that is a third sign that you may have plantar fasciitis.
Yeah. So let's go back to the first step in the morning, because that is definitely something people talk about all the time. And so what is happening with your foot when you sleep? And then what is happening with that first step?
Right. So the reason that the pain is most severe in the morning is because when we're sleeping, our foot naturally goes into a plantar flex position. So you know, this is just natural. It happens when we're sleeping. So when we go to put that pressure, we go to load that foot with the first step, it's an initial stretch of those structures, the plantar fascia, the intrinsic muscles of the foot, the calf muscle, all of those are just immediately stretched and it's going to scream at you. So that's why that happens. And, you know, anytime there's a long period of rest and then you get up and stress that muscle, you can experience more tightness or more symptoms with that.
Okay. So are there people who are more susceptible to this than others? Like, who gets plantar fasciitis? Yeah. Is it, you know, flat-footed people, high arch people, you know, overweight people, underweight people? Like, who are the main victims?
Yeah. I think that, you know, you alluded to, you know, a couple of things that people, some of the most common myths. So they, I hear a lot, I think I develop plantar fasciitis because I have flat feet or because I have high arches. And there is actually no correlation in arch height and plantar fasciitis. So flat feet and high arches can be healthy feet. They are natural and it does not contribute to the disorder. So the people, however, that are more susceptible would be, I'll kind of go into some of the main causes. The first, one of the first main causes would be limited dorsiflexion, which means the inability to dorsiflex the foot, bring your ankle, you know, or your foot into flexion. That's dorsiflexion. Mm-hmm. If this is limited, if this mobility in this ankle joint right here is limited, that sets people up for it. Calf inflexibility. You know, you hear, you go online, you say, oh, I've got plantar fasciitis, so let me check Google. And the first thing you hear is that, okay, I need to stretch my calf muscle. And that is true. And I will recommend some different type of stretching in a moment. But calf inflexibility, limited ankle mobility, and dorsiflexion is one of the main causes. So those people that have those loss of motions there are more susceptible. The second would be weakened foot intrinsic muscles. So our feet have a ton of muscles in here. That's, I think, one of the reasons I'm so fascinated with feet and that I've just become a foot geek. And the fact that my last name is Walk. So I was destined.
I know. I was going to bring that up.
I was destined to be a chiropractor and to specialize in feet, right? So these intrinsic muscles of the feet become weakened. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of them we think were actually helping, you know, inserting an orthotic into our shoe. Things like that actually weaken our foot muscles. But that would be one of the second main causes, would be weak intrinsic muscles of the foot. The third sign or the third most common cause would be the presence of fascial adhesions. Now, you had, that was one of the questions that you had later about regarding myofascial release and the importance of that. But with any mechanical or soft tissue condition, you're going to develop some scar tissue or adhesions in the muscle. And with that, I recommend releasing those fascial adhesions with techniques like Graston or Gua Sha, which is using a stainless steel instrument to remove those adhesions. So that would be the third cause, would be the presence of those adhesions.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, the weak muscles in the feet. So is that simply because we wear shoes all day? Should we be running around barefoot? Should we be strength training barefoot? Should we, you know, walk around in the grass? Like, what are some things that we can do to make sure we do have strong foot muscles?
Yeah. So, you know, people, I call it the foot core, and people say, well, does my foot have a core? Well, it does. And it, when it is weak, it sets us up for these unnatural gaits and injuries. So yes, unnatural footwear is one of the main causes of weak intrinsic foot muscles. And what I mean by that is I have a couple of visual aids, and you know, everybody loves visual aids, right? This would be a type of shoe that is narrowed at the toe or tapered at the toe. This sort of footwear is not shoes that fit your feet, right?
Okay.
Why so many shoe brands develop shoes with this type? It's for aesthetics only. It is not for function.
Right.
And so this type of shoe, now this is sort of a dress shoe, but they also put the tapered toe and the narrowed toe box in running shoes, you know, not just women's high heels, but running shoes, men's shoes. That type of tapering creates a shifting of your first toe. When that first metatarsal is shifted inward, it, you know, we talk about compensations. When one part of your body is not functioning as it should, well, it's going to incorporate other muscles and other structurals to complete the action.
Right.
With this, when this is shifted inward for, you know, as a result of the, unnatural footwear, it creates a weakness of those foot muscles. So footwear is really, it is absolutely the very first thing that we address with people who have any type of foot condition, whether it's Achilles tendonitis, shin splints, any type of lower leg is footwear.
Yeah, good advice. I have not worn high heels in, I think, 5 or 6 years.
Right.
I had a little injury that I couldn't wear them for a while.
Right.
And then after I healed my heel,
right.
I was I'm done with it. I don't need high heels. I don't care if I'm 5'4".
Right.
I don't need those. but so let's talk about prevention. So first of all, can we prevent this with some prehab? And then we'll talk about what happens if our efforts fail.
Okay, absolutely. So the first thing we talked about, what are the common causes? We're talking about limited mobility in the calf muscle and ankle mobility. So in order to prevent that, since we connected, I listened to some of your podcast, and, your runners are educated and savvy regarding types of stretching, strength training, cross training, things other than just running, which is so important, and dynamic stretching versus static stretching.
Yeah.
So
Tell us about that.
Dynamic stretching is stretching that involves movement or motion. Static stretching is, where you're in a immobile, one position, and you're stretching. And so you're going to stretch your hamstrings. You bend down, you hold that stretch for 30 to 60 seconds. That's a static stretch. Mm-hmm. A dynamic stretch is where there's motion involved. For runners, if an activity like a walking lunge would be a dynamic stretch, or standing and knees to chest, action, it's a motion, but you're also stretching and warming up the musculature before or after a run.
Mm-hmm.
I am an advocate of active isolated stretching. And so it can get a little hinky or a little deep into medical terminology. I'll try not to do that too much, but I think it's important for people to understand why it's effective. Active isolated stretching is where you're only stretching for 2 seconds. So instead of stretching for 30, 60 seconds in one movement, let's say I'm going to do an active isolated stretch on the muscles in the side of my neck. So I'm going into the stretch, I'm holding for 2 seconds and back to normal. Back to neutral. It's multiple passes. So it's more like repetitions versus a static stretch. So 1, 2, back to neutral. 1, 2. And what we have learned is that a couple of things happen here. With a rehabilitation, regimen, what we're looking for, the two things we're looking for is one is increased flexibility, but also circulation, proper blood flow. Anytime you want to heal an area, that blood flow has got to come in there and do its thing, right? With active isolated stretching, it's more effective at that. So for rehab, that's what most of, physical therapists, chiropractors, athletic trainers have shifted to the active isolated stretching. Mm-hmm. The second thing that happens is that when I go into this stretch, I'm stretching this side here, but I'm activating the muscles on this side. So it's an action called reciprocal inhibition. So hang with me here. So when I contract the muscles on this side, it causes a reciprocal relaxation of the muscles on this side. So
on the opposite side of your neck, for those who can't see you.
I totally forgot that. But yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's okay.
The same thing would occur. Let's say you're doing a hamstring stretch. You're on the floor. You're bending forward to stretch that hamstring. So you would go into the stretch for 2 seconds. So you're actually contracting the quadricep, which is the thigh muscle, mm-hmm. which causes a inhibition or relaxation of your antagonist muscle, which is the hamstring. So that's what makes the active isolated stretching so effective. And so in getting back to your original question of prevention, active isolated stretching of the calf, which includes the gastroc soleus, those muscles there, and Achilles tendon. So active isolated stretching of the calf muscle, as well as some footwork. So the second thing that I would recommend as far as a targeted exercise is a simple exercise called short foot exercises or foot doming.
Okay, tell us about that.
Foot. Okay, so the foot, you put your feet flat on the floor. You raise, contract the arch muscles, and keeping the toes and the heel on the floor and just raising the arch. So again, you're doing repetitions. Maybe you would do, 10 to 15 repetitions of foot doming. So that is the best way to strengthen those intrinsic foot muscles.
And we can do that at work while we're sitting at the computer. I'm doing it right now.
Right? Absolutely. When, we sit and watch our shows in the evenings, and I just make a point to go through my exercises. I also do what's called toe spreading, where you're spreading all your toes as far as you can and kind of, initiating all those good stretching and of those muscles in between your toes, and then relaxing, toe spreading, and then relaxing. So I love doing footwork, but even, someone who specializes in this, I'm very consistent about keeping my feet nice and strong and healthy.
If you are a runner who constantly struggles with a sensitive stomach during runs or often has gas, bloating, or cramps after hard workouts, despite eating healthy, nutritious foods, then digestive enzymes could be the solution. Digestive enzymes are naturally occurring proteins that your body makes to help break down food and aid digestion. For example, the enzyme protease helps digest the proteins you consume. If you're lacking in protease, then your body can't properly break down what you eat, which results in digestive stress, gas, and bloating. Plus, you're not able to absorb the nutrients from the food you eat. Since we know stomach issues are such a prevalent issue for runners, we asked our friends at Bioptimizers to hook you up so you could try digestive enzymes with no risk to see if they can work for you. Right now, you can get a bottle of Masszymes for free. All you need to do is pay a small shipping fee, and there's no catch. There's no tricks, no forced continuity, nothing to cancel. Masszymes is a 17-enzyme full-spectrum formula with 5 different kinds of protease. Plus, it contains all the key enzymes needed for optimal digestion. It also contains astrazyme, which is an all-natural, plant-derived compound that boosts amino acid absorption by 30 to 60%. I absolutely love the attention to detail and the focus on quality in every Bioptimizer supplement I've tried, and Masszymes is no different. So head on over to their site to grab your bottle before they either run out or take down this offer. Go to masszymes.com/runtothetopfree. That's masszymes.com/runtothetopfree, all one word. You will automatically get access to your unique coupon code to claim your free bottle. Limit 1 per household. Offer is valid while supplies last. If you struggle with stomach issues, this could be a game changer. Yeah. Well, that's great. Those are some really good tips. So what do we do if, we didn't keep our feet strong and oops, we have plantar fasciitis? So, let's say I come to you, I show up at in your Nashville office and I say, help me, Dr. Angela, what can I do?
Okay. The first thing we, and I've talked about this already a couple of times, is footwear. The first mm-hmm. thing we do is I want to make sure your footwear is supporting your feet. And I'm going to, again, I've got a couple of examples of some good footwear here. Okay. So, the first element on your footwear that you want to ensure that you have is a wide toe box. We're okay. not just talking about a wide shoe. That's different. So, you know, how you would choose a, you know, a narrow size or a wide size. We're talking about a shoe being widest at the toe. So mm-hmm. I know, you know, some
And
of
it
you,
looks like you're holding up an Ultra brand. Yes, is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah. This okay. is my absolutely top or highest recommended shoe for running. I play pickleball. I'm an avid pickleball player. And so I actually play pickleball in my Ultras. But a wide toe box, during our gait phase, when we toe off, our toes spread and splay as we're toeing off. Mm-hmm. It's so important for our gait, for our intrinsic foot muscles, that this action happens. When you're in a narrow shoe, and this is an example of a running shoe that I wouldn't necessarily recommend, but this is, see how that's narrowed at the toe, tapered mm-hmm. at the toe. So that's the first qualification there, a criteria. The second okay. would be zero heel elevation. So okay. sadly, on a lot of the running shoes, there's an elevation of the heel, and you can mm-hmm. see this. I believe, you know, it was placed there to take some stress off of the Achilles.
Yes.
But now we know that with the chronic shortening of the Achilles, it sets you up for injury. So zero heel elevation. The third thing, did you have a question?
Oh yeah. I was just going to say though, you know, different runners really like different shoes. You know, I love all types of shoes. I have zero drop. I have big drops. You know, a lot of the super shoes, the super fast shoes have a higher drop. We're talking, you know, 9 millimeters and up, high shoes. And to mm-hmm. be honest, I love those shoes. I love them all. You know, yeah. I don't pledge allegiance to any of them, but right. I know that people with Achilles problems tend to do better, at least anecdotally. I don't know about, you know, hard science, but they tend to do better in a shoe that has a little bit of a lift.
Yes. And I have seen that. And anywhere from 3 to 5 millimeters in the elevation of the heel, I think is a little safer than getting higher than that. But mm-hmm. I also, at some point, like to see my patients transition slowly into zero drop. The important part phase of the gait is the toe off or the propulsion phase. And when that occurs, your toes naturally spread and splay. And that's what we want to have in your footwear, is the ability for your foot to do that. Having a wide toe box, you know, or where it actually gives you plenty of room for that to happen, is ideal. The other criteria would be flexibility in the shoe. So you want the shoe to be able to be flexible, to roll up into a ball even. The less material between your foot and the earth is ideal. So we don't need a lot of cushioning either. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of people are buying a lot of the shoes with a tremendous amount of cushioning, thinking, hey, the better shock absorption I have, the less likely I am to injure my foot, or this is going to fix my foot. And it's actually not true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, definitely. We do want to tell everybody that, changing your shoe dramatically from one, you know, to the other can, cause you issues. So you do want to do this gradually, correct?
So that's key. And, you know, yeah. you can have someone that even, and I don't want to forget to talk about orthotics, because this is
yes,
another
please.
Important thing.
Yes,
so let's not forget to return to that. But many people who have been using orthotics for a long period of time, we recommend that you shift out of those slowly, that you shift into this natural footwear transition, you know, a safer transition, to footwear that mimics more barefoot walking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we can jump into the orthotics thing. So for those who've never really, you know, don't really know what they are, tell us what orthotics are, what are they mainly used for, and why you should hopefully transition away from them.
Orthotic robs or denies your feet the opportunity to work. And so it creates essentially a lazy foot.
Okay.
Okay. So we've spoken several times already about the importance of the strength of the intrinsic muscles of the feet. And so the orthotic, now I am not opposed to this type of orthosis in the initial phase. When you're really hurting, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, take that orthotic out of there and get rid of your cushion and shoes. I'm not going to do that. You know, you're hurting. We're going to slowly transition patients out of the orthotic and transition them slowly again to minimalist footwear.
Okay. Okay, good. So what are some of the treatments? So you've got it, you know, your shoe is, you got the right shoe, but you know, you're in a lot of pain. First of all, runners want to know, can I still go running?
You're right, absolutely.
And what should I be doing to get better?
Right, right. Well, this is the absolute at the top of the list for runners that come to see me for any lower extremity condition. And that is, when can I run again? And, you know, do I have to completely stop? And my answer to that question is, you know, basically the intensity. If you start off running and the pain intensity is at a level of a 2, maybe a 3, and it diminishes as you run, that would be sort of, you know, where you're in the beginning phase, and it would not potentially aggravate the condition. Mm-hmm. If your pain intensity is higher than that, we're looking at, you know, some patients will say, when I start running, it's an 8 or 9, but as I continue to run, it diminishes to maybe a 4 or 5. Is it still okay? I would say no.
No.
You know, and that is, you know, I think with any sort of thing, you know, a symptom is obviously your body telling you, hey, something is wrong. And so you don't want to ignore that. So what I typically recommend is a 2-week, you know, taking 2 weeks off. And that is, you know, actively or working on the corrective exercises of strengthening the muscles in the foot core. Mm-hmm. Actively using, you know, active isolative stretching to increase flexibility in that calf muscle. And then, you know, incorporating some myofascial release or fascial release techniques into the gastroxoleus complex and Achilles, you know, your calf muscle, and into those areas that also, you know, contributing factors to plantar fasciitis.
Okay. So, you know, you held up earlier your torture device. Your Graston technique device. So it's basically a piece of steel that looks sort of like a shoehorn. I don't know if people know what shoehorns are anymore.
Right.
But so I have done this a little bit, and it's basically you scrape your skin and, well, you tell us how to do it.
Okay. So, you know, in mechanical issues, there is, whenever there's a breakdown of the tissue, there is you know, a repetitive strain. It creates micro tears, or what we call micro trauma. This leads to scar tissue and scar tissue formation. So that is the way that our body heals from an injury. However, those tissues are, the scar tissue is less elastic, which means it's less flexible. It's more sensitive to pain, and it gets a less blood supply. So important to break that up. So using this tool, now what we would do, let's say I were going to use it on my forearm, and I do recommend a lot of patients, you know, use it for other overuse issues such as carpal tunnel or tendonitis. We're finding the areas of restriction or impingement. You're running the instrument over the tissue. Oftentimes it feels bumpy and tender, and you're applying unidirectional strokes on the tissue for about 15 to 30 seconds. And basically it's massage, but you're using, you know, a tool. I have even had patients use a handle of a tablespoon. Now you use this on the bottom of your foot, you you use it on your calf muscles or your Achilles. And I do have a guide on how to use this properly on my website, so there is some more details there.
As this summer temps heat up, you'll hear more and more that you need to hydrate. But as an athlete, training effectively in the summer heat requires more than just water. You need electrolytes too, especially because you sweat more as a runner. Electrolytes are charged minerals that conduct electricity to power your nervous system and help you balance fluid levels. The most important electrolytes for runners are sodium, potassium, and magnesium. Maintaining healthy electrolyte levels will not only improve performance and endurance on the run, but can help with preventing headaches, maintaining a healthy weight, and help with recovery. That's why we recommend all runners check out Element this year. It's loaded with everything you need to replenish your electrolyte balance with 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium, and it doesn't include anything you don't need, like extra sugar or anything artificial. Even better, they are currently running a special deal where you can get a free Element sample pack with any order. So order your favorite flavor and get a free sample pack to try out new flavors or share with your running friends. To get this special offer and make sure you're hydrating properly this summer, head over to drinkelement.com/runnersconnect. Okay, great. So one thing I wanted to talk to you about, so you said that, you know, plantar fasciitis, itis meaning swelling. There's usually no swelling, but the first thing that people do usually is grab some ice for any kind of ache and pain. And I would love to get your thoughts on ice for a non-swelling injury.
Okay. I actually just posted on this where is rice wrong? You know, rest, yeah. Ice compression, elevation, is rice wrong? And, you know, for years and years, you know, that was the first initial during the acute phase is that icing was the best practice. And it can provide some pain, you know, diminishment in pain where, you know, it numbs the area, and it can also diminish some of that, you know, fluid buildup. However, long term, you know, if there's a, you know, a non-inflammatory component, the most effective treatment is heat. Yes. And I've even, you know, some people say, well, ice just feels good. I'm not opposed to alternating ice and heat, where you would use ice for maybe 10 or 15 minutes and then apply heat for 10 or 15. That creates sort of a pumping mechanism and further allows for those fluids to shift out of there. But moreover, heat would be the best treatment there.
All right. All right. So what are we looking at as far as a timeline? I know it's individual for everybody, but, you know, when you get diagnosed with PF, how long are we looking at to get back to 100%? And when do we know when it's bad enough that we need to take some more serious intervention like surgery?
Right. 4 to 6 weeks. And we're looking at actively, you know, the things that we've mentioned, you know, the corrective exercises, some active isolated stretching. Typically, most of our patients resolve in 4 to 6 weeks. And of course, addressing that footwear is critical.
Mm-hmm. There are some cases that certainly don't resolve in that long and they, you know, go to surgery. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, surgery is the absolute last option. And in fact, it creates more problems further, you know, down the line. We talked about initially how important the plantar fascia was in the gait sequence. And so cutting that plantar fascia, you know, interrupts, you know, the gait sequence, further leads to more scar tissue formation and is not you know, obviously the first line of defense. It would be the absolute line of defense, but I am not an advocate of the fasciotomies, which is, you know, cutting the plantar fascia.
Okay. So what questions are not yet answered in the science? What research would you like done in this area in the future?
Okay. I would definitely like to see more research done on the issues created by poor footwear, you know, the narrowed toe box, and also using orthosis such as, you know, orthotics or night splints. I would love to be able to show patients that, hey, you know, in the short term, these type of, you know, modalities can help, but long term, you know, not for rehabilitation. Because what ends up happening is when patients are first diagnosed with plantar fasciitis, they're put into or fitted for a custom orthotic. They're given a cortisone shot, you know, instructed to do endless, you know, static stretching of the calf. And so I think if there was more research there regarding how these particular things inhibit good, healthy, you know, foot strength, and damage and the foot structures as well as lead people to injury, I think that would, even in, you know, our world of people who specialize in feet, would come around to more of the things that we're teaching now.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap it up. But before I let you go, I have a few questions that I ask everyone. The first one is, and I know you're not a runner, but you are active, so we'll just use the word fitness. So if you could go back and talk to yourself when you first started your fitness journey, what advice would you give yourself?
I would say be sure and incorporate other activities such as, you know, resistance training. Like I play, I'm an avid pickleball player as well as a cyclist. And I would say, you know, instead of just relying upon these particular exercises, I would do more strength training, more injury prevention.
Love it. Love it. What is the greatest gift that fitness has given you?
You know, I would have to say, you know, exercise and fitness for me is more than just a physical reward. It's mental health for me. I'll share this brief story with you. I just, about 10 days ago, I was hit in the eye with a pickleball.
Oh, no.
And I have had a detached retina. And so it was pretty scary there for a moment. I lost all vision in one eye. I had to have emergency eye surgery. And, you know, there was some concern about my eyesight and whether it was going to be restored fully. And I was fearful of that. But the other thing that bothered me the most is that I have to be inactive for about 2 weeks. And, you know, the physician, the doctor, the ophthalmologist was, you know, no pickleball for a couple of weeks, you know, no cycling, nothing that raises your heart rate. And I was like, no, you know, this is, you know, my mental health, you know, time when I'm exercising. So I would say that, you know, just exercise for me is not just, hey, it keeps, you know, my weight is maintained, but also just a time for me to, you know, be alone, to reflect mentally on what's going on in my life. And that's so healing for me.
Absolutely. Are you okay?
I'm good. I have had two surgeries so far. And, you know, at this point, you can barely tell. It looks like I have another appointment in the morning to sort of see where everything is. But it looks like I'll be back on the courts in another week or two. So.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, be careful out there. And finally, Dr. Angela, where can listeners connect with you?
Well, I have a tremendous amount of information on my website, which is drangelawalk.com, drangelawalk.com. I'm also active on Instagram, and that's kind of my favorite place to be these days, interacting with the community. And that is at the plantar fasciitis doc is my username.
Great. And we will have all of that in our show notes in case the listeners are on the run right now. Most of them are while they listen, so they can go back and check that for all of the information, plus some goodies for you that I'll talk about in a minute. So Dr. Angela, I really appreciate you being on the show today. We had a little bit of technical issues, but hopefully it's all smoothed out because your information is so valuable to all the runners out there.
Thank you so much, Claire. I enjoyed it.
So were you doing the foot exercises Angela mentioned while you were listening? I definitely was. As I mentioned at the top of the show, you can grab Angela's free PF treatment guide in our show notes at runnersconnect.net/542 and get 20% off anything in Dr. Angela's online store with free shipping at drangelawalk.com with the code RUNTOTHETOP. I hope this episode inspires you to keep your hardworking feet strong and healthy. Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast with me, Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner. Our mission is to help you become a better runner with every episode. Connect with me on Instagram at The Planted Runner and at Runners Connect. Join the Runners Connect team at runnersconnect.net and support our show for free with a review on Apple Podcasts. If you love the show and want to get more free content in your inbox, become one of my favorite listeners and get the elite treatment at runnersconnect.net/podcast. Have a great run today.